From NPR Music, this is Deceptive Cadence, NPR's classical music blog. I'm Tom Heisinga, and as far as piano playing goes, it doesn't get much better than this. That's Leif Ove Andsnes, the Norwegian pianist, who is one of the most sought-after musicians on the scene today. The New York Times called him a pianist of magisterial elegance, power, and insight. He performs with the best conductors and chamber musicians and orchestras. He has served as the artist-in-residence with the Berlin Philharmonic, and he'll take over as music director of the 2012 Ojai Music Festival in California. And to top it off, quite literally, he's got a well-developed sense of adventure. He once had a baby grand helicopter to the top of a mountain precipice to play music by fellow countryman Edvard Grieg. I'm happy to say that Leif Ove Andsnes is here today to help us mark the 200th anniversary of the birth of Franz Liszt by spinning some of his favorite Liszt recordings. Leif Ove, welcome.
Thank you very much. Nice to be with you.
I think the last time we talked actually was about 10 years ago after you had just won the Gilmour Award and you played a very beautiful Schubert sonata in B-flat major here in our NPR studio. You remember that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, thank you.
That was quite a while ago. Beautiful performance. Now, naturally, we've been hearing a lot about the famous composer and piano virtuoso Franz Liszt this year. Quite a few record releases out already. His actual 200th birth date is October 22. Leif, do you remember your first encounter with the music of Franz Liszt?
I am not sure. I think I was listening to the first piano concerto, possibly played by Marta Argerich. I think my parents had a recording of an LP of her playing, and also of her playing of the sonata, which I then listened a lot to when I was, I think, 11 or 12. But I think maybe the first piano concerto I listened to maybe when I was 5 or 6, and I played a few pieces already when I was 7 or 8 years old. I think maybe one of the Consolations. They are not so difficult. And then the famous third Liebestraum, I was trying to get through at that age, I think.
Do you remember your first impressions of that concerto and some of the tougher music of Liszt that you heard while you were, you know, still a student, right?
When I was a child, I just remembered. I thought it just sounded completely impossible to play, but so impressive, so full of colors. And I always thought it sounds like three pianists are playing at the same time. There's so much in Liszt's music. There's everything from the most seductive, rather poor, sentimental pieces to incredible, ambitious works. You know, and he's still very underrated.
Let's get to one of your picks. You've chosen a lot of great recordings, many piano recordings, naturally, of Franz Liszt. And what shall we start with?
I think we could start with one of the Petrarca sonnets, the number 104, played here by, I think, maybe the greatest pianist of all time, or at least in recording age, Dino Lipatti.
You've said that Dino Lipatti has been a big inspiration for you. Why is that?
Well, for me, there's a level of refinement, of pianistic perfection, which is unparalleled. There is music that sounds so inevitable and at the same time totally natural and spontaneous. And you feel the music or the composer speaks when he plays. There is never, you never feel it's calculated or he draws attention to himself. At the same time, it's very clear that this is a gigantic personality. Who really knew what he was doing. And to think that he was still early in his development, you know, he died in his mid-30s of leukemia, he would have been a towering figure, and even more than what his reputation is now, had he had the opportunity to be with us for a few decades more.
That's right, he died in 1950. He was only 33. And so let's hear this Petrarch Sonnet number 104. It's Dino Lipatti. The Romanian pianist recorded in 1947. ¶¶ What can we learn about the style of Liszt playing today by hearing this old 1947 recording?
The playing of Lipati is timeless in a way. I find him a very, a modern pianist, if we could call it that. There's nothing that I feel would need a sort of upgrading to our time in his playing at all. I think it just sounds, you feel so well where he's going, where which harmonies are the most important, and every passage are sounding different in a way that sounds spontaneous, but it's so worked out in his head. This piece is so extremely beautiful, but can so often become sentimental, and never would Lipati.
So those are things that you try to incorporate into your own playing, I would imagine?
Absolutely. There's a great drama, great flow and waves in Liszt's music. It can sometimes, like in a piece like this, become a bit syrupy, too much sugar. It has to be extremely beautiful. There has to be these moments of tension and relaxation, which are very important. But to avoid this very sugary sentimentality, I'm trying to as well.
That's Dino Lipati, recorded in 1947, the Petrarch Sonnet number 104 of Franz Liszt. We're talking with Leif Ove Andsnes, the Norwegian pianist, marking the 200th anniversary of the birth of Franz Liszt. What draws you to Liszt as a pianist yourself?
I would say first and foremost the colors. When you're playing Liszt, you feel that you have an orchestra in your hands. He was starting to use all these tremolos in the bass, reminiscent of a bass and cello section in an orchestra. Very often these passages are hammered out, I think, today on modern pianos in a way that you hear the notes too clearly. These are supposed to be murmuring sounds and threatening, but he had an incredible imagination of sound. And then to be able to write this for piano, the pianistic possibilities are just incredible. He must have been an astonishing pianist.
We just listened to Dino Lipati, and I noticed that you have another pianist on your list who also died way too early, and that is William Capel, who made a 1951 recording that we're going to hear in a moment of the Hungarian Rhapsody number 11. This Capel recording is pretty famous. What's all the fuss about, do you think?
Capel was arguably the most promising, talented American pianist in the 20th century. I would put also Leon Fleischer in that category. And he died then in a plane crash, about the same age as Lipati was when he died. The burning passion and conviction in Capel's playing was just incredible. You feel that he knows and feels and hears exactly what he wants. And there's such a burning temperament behind it, which is also the case in this Hungarian Rhapsody, which is music often played in a rather nonchalant, carefree way. This is not the case with Capel. From the first to the last note, we hear the inner drama, we hear where the phrase is going, and I just adore how he takes risks. Listen to the ending of this piece, the coda that's just unbelievable with this incredible tempo and the precision of the playing.
That's a wild ride there by William Capel, the Hungarian Rhapsody number 11. This is recorded in 1951. Leif Ove Andsnes is with me. I'm Tom Heisinger at NPR Music, and we're talking about Franz Liszt. Leif, I wanted to ask you, it seems that Liszt's reputation has kind of gone up and down over the years, and it always seems kind of fashionable, or at least, well, let's say it's kind of acceptable to dislike his music. I mean, especially his non-piano music. And I'm wondering if you have some thoughts about why, about Liszt's reputation and why it's a little easy to dump on Liszt sometimes.
He was also sometimes a kind of shallow pop star, you know, in his time. And there's music to underline that. Somewhat shallow. I mean, everything is done with sense of pianistic perfection and tone, but there are sort of seductive pieces, paraphrases that are maybe not so meaningful musically today and seem rather superficial. And the figure himself, I mean, he seemed to be sometimes calculating with his audience how to get success, and in that sense, it's quite a modern figure. But doesn't mean that he didn't have a very, very genuine, deep side to him. We like to think that composers like Brahms, who were so self-critical and threw away probably wonderful string quartets and just left us, you know, an output of very good pieces, that's the great composer. And then you have somebody like Liszt, who has left us so much music, where some music is shallow and some are some of the greatest masterpieces we have, that they are less good composers. I don't agree. Liszt is maybe a more interesting figure because he was just all over.
His life certainly was interesting. I mean, he led this life during the 1840s basically as the unparalleled virtuoso, traveling all over the place. And then he kind of gave all that up for a while and settled, when it was a pretty unfashionable thing to do, he took a court appointment in Weimar and settled down because he knew that he would have an orchestra at his disposal there and he could start writing orchestral pieces and larger pieces. And that's also where a lot of people came to see him. And, you know, Liszt was so... I think sometimes we forget how ahead of his time he really was. He was kind of the first to create the term, you know, recital, piano recital. He was one of the first to play entire programs from memory. He was also one of the first to place the piano at a right angle to the stage so that the open lid kind of pushed the sound over the auditorium. All of these things. And he also helped out a lot of composers as well. Was his music also ahead of its time?
Yes, and I think the piece you're leading to now, in a way, is the Faust Symphony. And
right,
talking about music ahead of its time, I mean, my goodness. I was talking to a good friend, Antonio Papano, the wonderful conductor, just 2-3 weeks ago, and he was studying the Faust Symphony, and he said just everything is there for the future. He was so excited about how to see, you know, where Tchaikovsky just got everything with his great build-ups and sequences of things happening. And then, of course, 20th century, you know, the big main theme in the first movement is basically a 12-tone theme. And to see then this breadth and this ambition of this composition, no wonder why Wagner loved this piece so much. Incredible, incredibly ambitious music, arguably his greatest piece.
Yes, you can, especially in the beginning, let's hear those opening phrases, which some people have actually spotted as the earliest 12-note row in history, and there's no doubt that when you hear this, you can't think of the beginning of Rheingold, the beginning of Tristan, and a lot of other of Wagner's music. It's the opening of the Faust Symphony here with Leonard Bernstein and the Boston Symphony Orchestra. Like, you have no idea where the music is going at this point.
Absolutely. And I just identify this so much with the mountains, because 10 years ago I got to know this piece while driving a lot through the mountains of Norway. Thank you.
You had picked a recording of the Faust Symphony that was out of print, and then I went to go look for some other recordings of the Faust Symphony.
Yeah.
And you know, there are very few recordings of the symphony that are still in print. So it seems that even though Liszt is a big towering figure, that especially his orchestral music is still underappreciated. I mean, Leonard Bernstein called this Liszt's one true masterpiece. And even this recording that we're listening to is teetering on the brink of being out of print. So,
I'm surprised how many musicians who don't know it. It really needs performers, this piece.
You mentioned earlier that when you were younger and heard some of Liszt's piano music, that you were thinking that it was incredibly difficult. And it seems that in years past, some of Liszt's more difficult piano music hasn't really been approached by that many pianists, but nowadays it seems that almost everyone, you know, tackles these very difficult Liszt pieces. You think we have a more talented crop of younger pianists these days that are able to pull off these very difficult pieces?
I think we have many pianists today who are able to play Liszt, who are able to get through it. Whether we have greater talents today, I'm not sure of. I think there were amazing pianists in the past, but maybe the sheer mechanical level today is higher, as you need that to be able to get through this music. Maybe this music is then played more today, and I think it's also more appreciated today. You know, if you go two generations back, people were often thinking in terms of the great music, which was very often the Germanic music, Bach, Mozart, Beethoven, Brahms, and a few others. Then there was the less great music and the virtuosic music, where clearly Liszt was falling into that category. And one seemed to divide pianists very much in two categories. And I think, fortunately, that time is gone. A lot of us today are playing Liszt and Brahms and Rachmaninoff and Bach and Ligeti and Chopin, you know, in the same programs. And I think that's really good, because these were great personalities in taking very different parts.
Speaking of someone that puts Chopin and Ligeti and Liszt on the same program, you've chosen Liszt's probably his most famous piano work, the B minor sonata, in a relatively recent recording by the Chinese pianist Yuzhe Wang. She released a CD a couple years ago that had the Chopin B-flat minor, an etude of Ligeti and some Scriabin, and the Liszt B minor piano sonata. Why choose this disc? What was special about this for you?
Of course, there are many good recordings of the Liszt sonata, but when I heard this a year ago or so, I just thought that this was so fresh and so new, very rhapsodic, very free in a way, but with such a consequence of the colors, where things are going. And I met Yuzhe Wang, I think, 4 or 5 years ago. She came to play for me in Spain. I was so bowled over by this talent. I can't remember having seen such pianistic possibilities like this. Her hands are born to play the piano. It's just incredible, her touch. It's very special sonority she has, very individual. And this piece really, really fits her. I think it's a very special performance.
Aren't you supposed to be, you know, competitive? And you're so generous with your praise of other pianists, even ones who you could say are your competition in the concert hall.
Even the ones alive?
Yeah. Yes, right. So,
well, not all, I would say, but there are some that I adore, and I think Yuzhe Wang has just incredible possibilities, and like all young pianists, she has things to learn. We all have things to learn, but I mean, the possibilities there are endless.
Thank you.
That's Yuja Wong playing the B minor sonata Franz Liszt. And we're talking with Leif Ove Andsnes, the pianist. I'm Tom Heisengetz, NPR Music, and we're marking the 200th anniversary of the birth of Franz Liszt. Still a little bit of a misunderstood composer, we think, but it's worth listening to a lot of his music. Leif, we were talking a little bit ago about the difficulty of playing Liszt and some of the just inherent difficulties in his music and how we could tell what a great pianist he might have been. And you were mentioning that there are plenty of pianists out there that can actually take on the very difficult pieces. And I noticed that on your list of records you want to spin today, there is a most staggering recording by Marc-André Hamelin of the Hungarian Rhapsody No. 2. Tell us about this recording.
I know Marc-André Hamelin a bit because we have done few programs together, actually. I've had the joy of doing Stravinsky's Rite of Spring with him on two pianos, which felt like events, every of the concerts we have been doing. He's an extraordinary pianist, and he sort of has the composer's ability to go to the core of the music immediately. Very, very unique figure today for me, and when he hits it, it's just incredible. And in this Rhapsody by Liszt, for me, he just gets straight to the heart of the composition, and then he has composed this cadenza, which at the time Liszt must have improvised, and which he sort of one could keep open for people to make their own cadenza. And this cadenza is beyond any pianistic extravaganza I have ever heard. It's quite astonishing. So I wanted to include that. And I'm then thinking of him as a sort of modern Liszt when he plays this cadenza.
Do you think he improvised this on the spot, or he worked it out ahead of time?
I think one cannot improvise this kind of cadenza. I think he has worked it out. And how?
It sounds like two people are playing for sure.
You think only two? I mean, that's part of this music, I think, that it's fun, and virtuosity is fun and exciting, and was very exciting in the time of Liszt that he could play these kind of pieces. And it's very exciting to hear Marc-André Hamelin play like this.
You mentioned the fun of the music, and there's no doubt that when you hear playing like that, like Marc-André Hamelin working out his own cadenza for that piece, that is the musical equivalent of being on a giant roller coaster, it seems to me. Do you think that's what attracts so many pianists to the music, is this kind of the big, the loud, the thousands of notes?
Yes, but I think it's more than that. It's the physicality of it. Also, when you hear, you know, the big climaxes of a Mahler symphony that makes you cry of sheer emotion because it just goes everywhere in your heart, but more than anything in your stomach. And it's the same here, that, you know, the vibrations of what's going on in the instrument when it's played this well. And it's very joyful when the music is meant to be joyful, and it's very dramatic when it's meant to be dark and dramatic. It has an effect. And that is sometimes seen as cheap, but you know, there wouldn't be much music without musical effect.
Right. You know, you've been choosing all the records, and I would like to choose one now, actually. And it's the polar opposite of what we just heard, in that you might say it's the kinder, gentler side of Liszt, and it isn't all roller coaster rides and thousands of notes. On your Liszt recital record that you released in 1999, you included this beautiful little elegy. It actually began its life as a song, and it's Die Zelle in Nonnenwert. Let's listen to a little bit of it, because I think that this proves that Liszt wasn't always the barnstormer and the man who wrote all the raucous music. It's absolutely delightful. those opening chords are so... What is going on with those chords that they're so affecting?
Yeah, and one immediately feels that space in the music. And there is space in Liszt, even when he is busy with notes. You know, you just feel this force of nature there. It's not urban music, first of all. It's nature. And here, it's there's so much landscape. And it, in the end, then becomes a meditation over the song, rather than just presenting the song itself. It's very interesting. He changes also the harmonic language. He becomes more in the sense of church music and silence. And
it's kind of visual too. I mean, when you read that he had spent summer on this island in the Rhine called Nonnenwert that had kind of an old broken down nunnery in it and just a few like fishing shanties, and the music reflects that kind of spare, very natural setting of being in a little island on a river.
He had an ability to put into music impressions of life. Some of his greatest pieces, the Pilgrimage Years, which are three books of pieces, so I would say more than 2 hours, 2.5 hours of music, many different pieces, and all of them individually describing places or literature or impressions of life. That is a great gift also. You know, it gives you pictures, it gives you smells.
Another piece that you have on your list that definitely has that visual quality to the sound is the Waldesrauschen, the forest murmurs, and you've chosen Geza Anda, the Hungarian pianist. I would assume that this was made probably sometime in the 1960s. Tell us a little bit about this recording and this piece and why you put it on your list of Liszt pieces.
For me, Geza Anda is and was an underrated pianist. He's one of my favorite pianists from the past, and he was sometimes labeled classical, especially after he did that wonderful Mozart's concerto set with all the concertos. But he was so much more than that. For me, you know, he has done the greatest Bartok concertos that are available on disc. He was Hungarian, and one feels that Liszt's music is bread and butter for him. What I love in his playing is the element of surprise, either in the way he chooses to pace things, you know, in terms of timing or rhythms, but also in colors. And he's not afraid to go forward where other people wouldn't, or take time, or, and with most artists these kind of surprises seems calculated in some way, but with him it seems so natural, seems so spontaneous, and I adore that.
Speaking of Hungarians who play Liszt, you chose a very interesting recording also on your stack of CDs. Is a recording that Béla Bartók made of music of Liszt, recorded back in 1936, and this is one of those pieces from Liszt's years of travel that you were talking about. Not many people know about this recording, but it's just live to the machine, so no editing here. Why are you drawn to this this kind of old scratchy recording?
Yeah, it's a curiosity in one way, and it's certainly not chosen because of the pianistic perfection, because one can hear here that there are mistakes in his playing, and it was so interesting for me to hear somebody like Bartók, often labeled as a modernist composer, having this veneration and respect and ecstatic feelings about this piece by Liszt, because this recording is so special. One feels this sort of inner ecstasy in his playing, and I love the freedom that he takes, and it's never static. Often this piece is very static in performances, and here it moves forward with an inner ecstasy and with happiness.
Béla Bartók in a 1936 recording of Sursum Corda, that's Lift Up Your Hearts in Latin, part of the Years of Travel book number 3 by Franz Liszt, documenting these years in the mid to late 1830s when Liszt was traveling in many places, Switzerland and in Italy especially, with his girlfriend, the Countess Marie Dagul. I'm Tom Heisinger, it's NPR Music, and we've been talking with Leif Ove Andsnes about Franz Liszt, and it's the 200th anniversary of the birth of Franz Liszt coming up, and you've chosen some great recordings. It's been a real treat talking to you about them and about the music of Franz Liszt. Do you keep many pieces of Franz Liszt under your fingers?
Actually, it's strange, because in this anniversary year, I don't think I'm playing a single piece by Liszt. But it has made me think, because there's interestingly a lot of attention on his music at the moment, and I'm now thinking about what should be the next thing for me to study. I've been busy with other composers, but I'm constantly thinking that, oh, there's that piece, there's this wonderful unknown piece, this late piece by him. There's a diversity to choose from in Liszt pieces, which is wonderful for a pianist, and I will certainly try to expand my Liszt repertoire in the years to come.
Well, you might not be playing any Liszt right now, but you're doing your job for Liszt by joining us today and talking about his music and picking some of your favorite Liszt recordings. Leif Ove Andsnes, thank you so much for stopping by, and we've caught you in is this your hometown of Bergen?
Yes, it is. It is. Yeah.
It's Leif Ove Andsnes from Bergen, Norway, joining us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom. It was a real pleasure.